Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, your Bengals beat writers for Cincinnati.com and Cincinnati Inquirer. What's up?
Hey, not much, man. Not much. Trying to take a breather, but as you know, there are no breathers.
No, there aren't breathers. You know how I learned that there aren't breathers? Or I shouldn't say learned. I was woken up with a reminder that there are no breathers. When at 6 a.m. on the literal first day of our offseason,
right?
Arrest Adam Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just nothing slaps you in the face. Like, yeah, don't think this is going to be some sort of offseason vacation. Like the three misdemeanors and a felony arrest overnight on the first morning. It was the first time we were going to sleep in. Like, it was the first.
Right.
We had had the locker room clean out and everything. We recorded the last BBP the night before. I was going to get up and whenever I wanted to and throw the BBP together for our peeps. And have a nice, easy day, ease into the off season. But That's not quite how it went.
No, it's funny, Paul, because we and I don't know if we've really gotten into this on the BBP. Maybe we did way back when I first started now, which is, believe it or not, Paul's 3 years come third football season in April 20th, believe it or not.
How about that?
Was how I'm kind of the night owl guy and you're morning guy.
Yeah.
So you know, like, I had gone to bed maybe just hours. You know what? I might have been up in Cincinnati at the same time this was actually happening. But as far as the news, you kind of drew the short end on that one.
I drew the short end. I hit the – you know what? It's pretty – I would say often morning guy takes a hit on this type of stuff, but – The beginning of stuff like this, where it's like tweets with the fake thugs at the BP,
yeah,
you know, that stuff tends to happen on your watch with the late night guy.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into the entire Adam Jones situation here. And then after that, we're going to run down our free agent list that we put out, where we had all of the Bengals free agents and the percentage chance of them returning and why. We've gotten a lot of questions about why some of our numbers are so low on some of those guys, particularly some of the bigger name guys.
Right.
So we'll definitely get into all of that. Let's start with this Adam Jones situation. So for those that don't know, I mean, you – open up the internet. I don't know what to tell you.
Right, yeah.
Adam Jones kicking, headbutting police when they showed up to him, basically being loud and allegedly poking a security guy in the eye. Really, the issues weren't, I don't think, I mean, those were misdemeanors.
Yeah.
The issues really happened after that when he got to the Justice Center and allegedly spit on a nurse.
nothing's come down at the time that we're recording this as far as an indictment or videos being released. That will happen at some point in the near future.
Right.
But, you know, you've got basically a felony for assaulting with a bodily fluid.
Right.
Which 99% of that charge, 99% of the time, is spit. And let's thank God that it's spit in this case.
Because right.
You start getting into the other bodily fluids, and it's just not a good situation.
No, no.
Okay, so what we wrote about, you know, the court stuff, it's going to work itself out. We'll figure out that the videos will come out. The court will do what it does. Adam Jones has had charges against him before that have been dismissed. He's had some that haven't. We'll see what happens with this particular case. We're not going to go speculating there. We didn't in print, and we're not going to do it here
right.
as to what will come of that. The bottom line is, what does it mean for this team? And how does it change what they could, if they were in theory to cut Adam Jones over this, to say enough is enough. I mean, it would be like a six and some change $1 million savings on the cap hit. That would be enough for you to go out and make sure that you retain Dre Kirkpatrick, and you would move forward with Dre, Darquez Dennard, who you would probably at that point give a fifth year option to, and William Jackson III, your first round pick from last year. You'd be younger. It would be a different dynamic back there. That's what you can do. The question is, will they? They've invested in Adam Jones, not just financially, but in taking a lot of hits over the years and feeling that they were finally reaping the rewards of it. And if they were to give that up now over one incident, it would definitely go against what we've seen as their pattern.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, Paul. Also, look, I mean, he's a year removed or a year into 3-year, $24 million contract. I mean, they paid him because they felt he would still be an elite corner into his mid-30s. And so I guess to me, any sort of release would have nothing to do with off-the-field stuff or whatever this turns out to be. It would be because they felt they saw such a huge slip in performance in 2016 that they thought it was just going to get that much worse. Where they're like, wow, here's an out, you know, in a deal that we just signed. And I don't think that's going to happen either, Paul, because Darquez Dennard still couldn't get on the field. I mean, he played in a rotation with Josh Shaw inside. And I never heard anything that made them think he was good enough. You know what I mean? I guess, I put it this way, Paul, I wouldn't be surprised if William Jackson III beat him out on the outside if Dre Kirkpatrick were to leave. So, whatever plays out, honestly, Paul, I think if he's indicted and a video comes out and it looks bad, I think Roger Goodell is going to take some of this off the Bengals' plate, and Adam Jones is going to be available for a while. And I know that's not money off the books. It's just money they don't pay that, you know, they can't allot it anywhere else. But, I just think there's not a football reason. Mike Brown is always about who's better, and I don't know if they have that yet. I get what you're saying, and I get that those thoughts. I don't know if they think he's declined so much on the field in 1 year that they're like, wow, here's an out, and that they'll take it.
Has it really gotten to the point that this is definitely more about football than about behavior?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think, Paul, since he's been in Cincinnati, and we wrote this in Cincinnati.com, yes, there have been times Adam Jones has appeared in court, but hey, legal process played out in 2013. He was found not guilty. And in 2011, you know, charges really weren't that egregious, if you will, in the scheme of the NFL and the law. The ticket he paid for disorderly conduct when he was a passenger in a car. You know, I think it's a football decision, Paul. I understand it's a pattern of behavior, But they signed him in 2010 with a pattern of behavior. So I, you know,
no, that was under the thought that he would come out of that pattern of behavior.
Yeah.
Right? Now you've got a 34-year-old corner who took a step back this past year and fell back into the same pattern that you talk about. And so it just in that respect, this has to be terrible. I mean, even Marvin Lewis on our show on BTS said himself, I mean, this is a terribly disappointing thing.
Right.
Now, it's not something they want represented on their team or the city or anything like that. And when you're 27 and you do this stuff, you have value. When you're 34 and you do this stuff, it changes a little bit. And the perception of, are we really going to continue to put up with this? What's the plus minus here?
That's totally fair. I think it's – honestly, though, Paul, I don't know. I think it's a football decision. I think it's strictly – it's in there when they take a hard look at this team and this defense. Did he – because, again, they signed him to a three-year, $24 million deal just a year ago. So, to me, Paul, it's got to be, I think – did he slip so badly on field in 2016 that they're like, wow, 2017 could be really bad, or he's going to have to move inside at nickel maybe a year earlier, and will he do that? What issues would that cause? That's what I think. I guess the only wild card, Paul, is the felony and what happens with that, and if a felony – is the straw that breaks the back for Mike Brown. You know what I mean? I hate to make this sound so crass, but like if it's misdemeanors and not guilties, like, you know, I mean, there's a certain level of things you got to live with, but maybe the felony, I don't know, Paul. I haven't been around in Mike Brown's history to know where a felony rates with him, you know?
I mean, obviously they're pretty reluctant to make moves or judge and not feel like guys still have good in them after stuff like this happens. But when if this plays out like what is alleged and you're spitting on a nurse who is in the Justice Center trying to do her job and losing your mind on police or whatever the heck is alleged that happened there, we'll see how that all plays out. But if that's the case, I mean, how long do you tolerate that type of stuff? I mean, this is 1 year almost to the day that we ran a story about Adam Jones apologizing for what happened at the end, for losing his control at the end of the Steelers game.
Right. Yeah, but I guess
to continue to run down that path. I mean, it's just it's honestly, I would love to be a fly on the wall for the discussions that are being had, and they're going to let it play out in court. And that is their pattern 100% with all of this type of stuff. Let it play out in court, and then they'll make their decision. But I just don't know how long you continue going along that path of a guy apologizing for being unable to contain himself and it bringing all this negativity upon the organization. I know they believe in him, and I know they invested in him and all that stuff. But I think it's a much more real conversation than people might imagine.
Yeah, I mean, that could be, you know, I guess the only thing I'll say about the playoff game, Paul, is they gave him a three-year, $24 million deal a couple months after that. So to me, I don't think they care about that at all. I think it'll strictly be a I think it's a football decision. And, you know, maybe I'll be wrong, you know. And I, some of this, again, is going to be taken out of their hands. I think the commissioner is in play here because, again, the felony is different. And if there's video, that makes it different. I mean, look, Roger Goodell.
The commissioner don't care? It's not like you can look at a precedent on any
of this
stuff.
Exactly. But what I guess
I – like, I didn't like the way that looked.
Right.
So three games.
I think exactly. I think right? – exactly. I think – here's the thing, Paul. We know, and as a journalist and entity, you know, the Inquirer just as a paper, as an institution, is doing its due diligence with freedom of information and just getting all – and we would do this for sort of anything we thought that mattered. but it's in the Justice Center. There is a video. That means it will come out eventually. And look, Roger Goodell, look, there's no consistency to punishment, but here's the thing. He reacts to visuals, and they react to public outcry. So, yep. You know, and, I'm just and assuming.
If the video is what is written that it's supposed to be, then there will be public outcry.
Yeah, so that's where I'm going with that one, Paul, is like we don't know what it could be, but I think there will be, strictly because the commissioner office, to me, has proven if they're consistent in anything – it's they don't like video and they don't like public reaction to video. And considering Adam Jones's long history, and while he has been quote unquote good in the league's eye since 2008, and I'm sure they'll take that into account. I don't think they can also forget the other suspensions prior to that. So
this is a league that put Adam Jones front and center at their rookie symposium, right, multiple times, as a cautionary tale and a guy who saw the light and helped bring up the young. They wanted him as a role model, basically. This isn't the Bengals doing that. This is the league putting him up on that stage. So the league sees him that way. So I think that gives you a bit of a view in how they feel about it. But that said, you're right. That would be interesting. We've only just begun in this whole saga, that's for sure. And we'll see how it plays out. I the league is definitely in play, and I think the Bengals are still in play. We'll see how everything comes out. Obviously, videos and indictments and trials and stuff are going to probably change the course of this thing significantly. Let's move on, because I can only handle so much Law and Order. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate, and it's a major position for the Bengals. But you know, although I mean, would you rather have in just one last thing, and I'll move on. Would you rather have in the 2017, if I gave you a 2-year span, would you rather have Drake or Patrick, Darquez Dennard, and William Jackson as your top three, or Adam Jones, Darquez Dennard, and William Jackson as your top for over a 2-year span?
Over a 2-year span. I mean,
that's what the football decision is about.
Right. Wow. You know? I guess I'd rather. I don't know if it's that much of an either or, because I don't know if Darquez Dennard would be here in that second year. You're assuming
that's assuming they exercise his fifth year option, which I think they would do if they let Adam go.
Yeah, so there's a lot of moving parts there. I don't know. I still think Adam Jones is their best corner. So
yeah.
So I you know what I mean.
The numbers in film would say that even in a regression year for him.
Yeah, and I still think he presents probably more value as a nickel corner at 35 years old, 36 years old in that last year of that deal than even Darquez Dennard at $8 million, whatever. So I guess I'm still gonna go with Adam. You know, if it's a football decision, yep, I think Adam Jones is still gonna be one of your top three corners at that point and a starter. That's what I think.
We shall see. So now as we start to get, this is kind of a nice segue as we get into the free agency. So we put out our list, go to Cincinnati.com and check it out. It will, who stays, who goes amongst the Bengals free agents, 14 of them. And we kind of put up some background and their status as far as cap numbers and stuff like that. Age, stats, all those things you need, along with our projection of what percentage chance we think that they won't return. So let's start here and just go down the list. We kind of have them. We have them as close to what we see as their priority, the Bengals' priority, as we can, as we think right now at this point. And it starts with a 35-year-old left tackle. But you know, obviously, everybody that is listening to this podcast probably knows his value to the organization and how well he's played into his older years. I mean, he's still playing at a Pro Bowl, All-Pro type of level, where if he came out and made the Pro Bowl or was an All-Pro next year, you wouldn't be shocked at all. But he's 35.
Yeah.
And he's going to demand some money.
Yep.
Because of what he's done. So I mean, I see him as priority number. I think we both agree he's priority number one because of the unknown that they have because Cedric Oboye flopped.
Yeah. Yeah, I without a doubt. The Oboye thing, it's funny, Paul. We've kind of touched on this a little bit with how that leverage has flipped for Andrew Whitworth just in the span of 16 games. Has to be the priority. I guess I'm curious how Andrew feels. I mean, the consummate pro, I mean, he let it be known late in the year he wants to be back and he wants to play left tackle. Now, he had always sort of allowed the idea that he would play guard because I think he wants to play more than 1 year. And he knows at his age, being out on the edge, you know, may preclude that from happening. So he's interesting to me, Paul. I could see the Bengals going to him with a multi-year deal at this point to maybe entice him to stay. And I could see them paying premium dollars. Not just for left tackle, but knowing that, well, maybe if in a year or maybe there's an option for a third, even at 38, moving them inside. You know what I mean?
Start getting into 38.
Here's the thing, there's a part of that too where, I mean, I think if you retire, all that money comes off the books anyway. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I can see a 2 year deal for sure. And I think they need to pay him, and I think they will make a very competitive offer. But he's got all the leverage. There are no left tackles on the market. The ones that are, you don't want. So he is. I could also see him saying, "You know what? You let me get to this point. I'm going to see what's out there." You know.
I agree. I definitely believe he clearly wants to be back here, and I agree with you. I think that they will give him 2 years. I think he has earned it and proven that he can hang still at that level. And you always have the option of moving him inside if you want to. I don't know what that means for other guys that are under contract, but 2 years at 18 to 20 million for Andrew Whitworth, I think is something that you probably should just start there. And I think Whit would want to win in his, and he's not going to be taking some like crazy hometown discount.
Right.
But he's not going to rake these guys for a few extra million dollars when he's got 11 years in the league and a lot of it at really nice salaries.
You're right. He won't ask them for tens and tens of millions of dollars. I think he gets where the team is at. But I think he wants to be paid, and why not? You know, at least a little bit of market value. I mean, he's probably one of the lower paid left tackles. In recent memory, right? For as good as he's been, for as long as he's been. So, but I do think he's got to be the number one priority. And I think he might affect his teammate down the line in Kevin Zeitler.
Yeah, which is a wonderful segue, Jim. That was very well done. We get to Whit, and one of the things that people were most surprised about with Kevin Zeitler when we were putting this out was how low we had him at. And we talked a little bit about this in recent weeks. We put him at 45% chance of returning just because, you know, you're talking about a guy who's basically a top five type of guard in this league, and those guys get paid a whole lot of money. And it's you know, the argument I hear is, well, don't be drafting guys and not be willing to pay them, but can you do both?
Right.
This team has a lot of cap room, but they view cap room differently than most people do. And can you do Zeitler and do Whitworth? I would think that they probably could, but you wonder at what expense.
Right. And here's the thing. The guard market is exploding. It began last year, and I think, to me, Paul, the team sort of explained it away as, well, Osamele's contract, who broke that $10 million barrier for guards. Well, that was really because Oakland had to pay somebody to get to the floor. Well, then David DeCastro got the same money in Pittsburgh, which was a very important deal because he's Kevin Zeitler's draft classmate, fellow first-round pick, 5 years, $50 million. Now, the Bengals might argue Kevin Zeitler's not as good as David DeCastro. And maybe that's a fair argument. Well, Kevin Zeitler already made $8 million. He's not going to take a pay cut.
And they could have picked David DeCastro and chose to move back and take Kevin Zeitler instead.
Right.
Keep that in mind. They preferred Zeitler to DeCastro
right.
when they got drafted. And I don't know that their opinion, has really changed much on that.
Right.
Since then.
So here's an interesting thing. You know, Zeitler made $8 million this past year. So according to one of our favorite and pretty much everyone's favorite cap websites, spotrack.com, the Bengals paid the sixth most money in the NFL to their guards, to their four guards on the roster in 2016. And obviously Kevin Zeitler made $8 million of that. That's a lot of money. The Bears signed Kyle Long to a $10 million a year extension. Now, granted, he's got the Pro Bowls too. Josh Sitton, who's got Pro Bowls, not making 10, but making a lot of money. I mean, they're just above the Bengals in cap dollars spent. And that's over 11. That was 11% of the Bears' cap in 2016. And I guess that's the thing. It's like Clint Bowling's making 5. Do you play Kevin Zeitler 9? 10, the Bengals have always thought those $10 million a year players are quarterbacks, receivers, corners, pass rushers, mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm curious. I mean, the cap's going up again. I think the Whitworth thing might play in. His willingness to move the guard, 2 year deal, $10 million per, good money for a left tackle. And then in 2018, if he moves inside, well, that's the going rate for guards because now everybody's making 10. I don't know. It's interesting, Paul. It's really interesting to me. And other teams are going to pay for Kevin Zeitler. I think that's the difference, too. Not that Witt couldn't get the money, but Kevin Zeitler's in his prime.
Yes.
And yeah. I think maybe that's the biggest difference hitting the open market for a guy like Zeitler.
Look, they felt an urgency to sign Marvin Jones last year, and they were willing to pay him more money than I think any of us expected.
Yeah.
And I look at that, and I wonder if that philosophy is not going to be applied to Kevin Zeitler here. Particularly because their offensive line is such a wreck around him. I mean, when you've got so much instability with Fisher and Obwehi and Bodine and Whitworth getting older and Bowling coming off a bad year, how does that not up the priority for you? Isn't that one of those grit your teeth, sign the check, and move on?
Right.
Type of things. You're right. It's $10 million for a guard. That's a lot of money. And I get it. What are they going to get on the opposite end of that? So
right.
If they decide not to pay it, what does that afford them? Drake or Patrick coming back? Well, you drafted two first round picks.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So you have guys waiting in the wing. So what else are you going to spend it on? I mean, Rex Burkhead, Brandon LaFell, we'll go down this list. Where else is that money go? To extensions?
Tyler Eifert.
It's not going to go to Tyler Eifert because they're not going to give him an extension with this back thing hanging out there and the injury issue this year. To Burfict, that guy's played almost the same amount of games in the last 3 years as Eifert has.
Right. Yeah, Paul.
That's my point. Where else is the money going to go?
And that's an excellent point. And you're right. Maybe again, we mentioned what a difference 16 games makes for Andrew Whitworth, and maybe that's the difference it took for the Bengals front office to see, hey, in this spring, summer of 2016, we didn't think guards were worth $10 million. But now that that's the going rate, you know, I mean, maybe Kevin Zeiler makes nine. Maybe he's happy with nine. And you're right. Where else does it go? Because I don't see this team really bringing in, you know, a high-priced linebacking free agent. And you're right, at corner, even if Adam Jones is suspended and even if Drake Kirkpatrick leaves, they have depth there.
One of their spots where they have major issues is going to be filled with the number nine pick in the draft. A starter at a spot where they're weak is almost certainly going to come out of that, and that guy's going to start because he's a top 10 pick, and even the Bengals play top 10 picks.
Right.
And that's how I view that. So whether it ends up being a linebacker or a pass rusher or a stud to play next to AJ Green or whatever the heck you want it to be, I mean, you're going to fill a position of need. They're not going to draft a guard at number nine.
No.
And, you know, it's at a certain point, you're investing in your line, okay? And you have to put the money into – who else? I mean, like you said, Bowling's making five. Obwehi and Fisher are on rookie deals. And
right.
Bodine's on a rookie deal, and you'll probably be starting over with another young guy – after next year anyway. If he does go on the free market, it wouldn't be expensive. I mean, you don't have that much money tied up in your O-line as a whole. Now, if you add in 10 to 9 million for Whitworth and Zeitler, you're probably where you should be, right?
Yeah, that is a great point. And I guess this conversation just goes how money is all interconnected. And I think if you're the Bengals, again, what sort of part of that Adam Jones conversation for me was, you know, the on-field, how good is he or was he or will he be? If you look at Paul Gunther's defense and the fact that they finally turned it around after the bye, the only starters you would lose would be Carlos Dansby and Drake Kirkpatrick, let's just say, right?
Right.
You've been preparing to lose Drake Kirkpatrick since the year after he was picked with Darquez Denard in a way. So, I think that's
how
one of those.
How far is the fall off
from
Dre to the next and Zeitler to the next? How far is it? We don't even know who's next after Kevin Zeitler.
Right.
That's how far the fall off is.
So, you're right. I guess for me, and you and I have gone back and forth on this. I think I maybe convinced you to drop the percentage on Zeitler to below 50, mainly because I think if he would not do himself justice by not reaching unrestricted free agency at 4 o'clock at the start of the new league year. And if that happens, I could see him getting money that makes the Bengals uncomfortable. Whereas I think Whitworth will sign in that sort of exclusive window in those 48 hours beforehand. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I think Whit will get done in February. Yeah. I really do. I think that they will come to Whit 2 years, 18. Let's do it. I think both sides would be agreeable to that.
Yeah.
And knock that out and then turn your attention to signing Kevin Zeitler and securing your offensive line. If they can't, and this goes back to last year. So what happened when Marvin Jones decided to go to Detroit because they couldn't get a deal? They upped the deal to George Iloka and locked him up.
Right.
So if they can't, you turn your attention to Drake Kirkpatrick and you lock him up.
Yeah.
For whatever it feels right at that position.
Yeah, I think it's a clear pecking order in that regard, Paul. Like it's 1-2-3, pretty clear. The strength that the Bengals have is that all these guys really like Cincinnati. They like being on the team. So if the money's comparable. And Marvin Jones is sort of the outlier because, you know, the league and Detroit presented Marvin something to a receiver that none of these other guys are going to get. Like Drake Kirkpatrick can't control how many interception opportunities he has. He knows how to market himself and get out there. I mean, I guess, Paul, if the money's the same in L.A. or the Jets, you know, maybe that tips the scales a little bit just because of what Dre wants to do off the field. But, if you're an NFL player and you're a Pro Bowler, you're going to get the things you want off the field, whereas Marvin Jones wasn't going to get 120 targets in Cincinnati, so he No. had to leave. Even though the money was the same. So really, Paul, you're right. I think that would be the only deterrent for Dre. I think the Bengals would put a similar offer as anyone else. It would just come down to that off-field thing. And honestly, I don't really know enough about New York and L.A.
I don't see
Chicago it. Even. You know what I mean? For them,
knowing Dre, I don't see that. There being a big city draw for him.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, obviously the markets and he's got a lot of plans as far as that goes. But I agree. I don't feel like he thinks he needs to be in New York or LA for that type of stuff necessarily. I mean, he's a small town guy and from the South and likes the small town feel of Cincinnati for that level. I'm sure a big city would give him advantages to things he wants to do, but I don't think he would pick him because of that. I think this is similar to the way we felt about George Iloka last year, in that something would probably have to go wrong with the top two for Dre to come to return, but that's certainly possible.
Yeah. It has little to do with how the team feels about him, Paul. I think it's right allocation of dollars.
Better and fallback options.
Right. And if you look, those
two things together.
Yeah.
I mean, they can easily plug in Darqueze Dennard and not necessarily see a huge drop off.
Because that is the difference here for people to remember. You know, a year ago, say what you want about Adam Jones, it was a career year. He was a Pro Bowl corner. And they returned. Yeah, and they felt that way. Kevin Zeitler, I don't know the mechanics of the sort of, Andrew Whitworth's fallen victim to this Pro Bowl thing for a long time. I'd have a hard time thinking there are many guards better than him right now. Mm-hmm. Whereas Dre, Dre was our most improved guy on our end of year list, but, he was all right. Yeah. So you're right. I think that's part of the thing.
It's number one corner guy.
Right.
I mean, whether you're looking at Pro Football Focus ratings or you're, talking to coaches. I mean, that's not the assessment that's out there. He's ascending. He is, I think, starting to figure things out. He's got all the physical tools you want. But he's not Darrell Revis, in his prime. So what do you, they who knows how the market will receive him?
Right.
I mean, they may feel like they could get all their top three if the market doesn't give Dre what he's maybe thinking he deserves or can get, and he falls back to a number the Bengals are comfortable with. That's possible.
And that's the thing, too, real quick before we move on to some of the other guys here. Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler, to me, Paul, are the best option, unrestricted free agents at their positions. You can make an argument for TJ Lang up in Green Bay at guard. He's 3 years older than Zeitler, though. What are you talking about? Matt Khalil and Luke Jones. I mean, but you go to corner, you've got Tremaine Johnson, you've got Prince Amukamara, forgive me for butchering that, Stephen Gilmore, Captain Munnerlyn. I mean, there's other options, I guess, around Dre, Josh Robinson, and there's guys, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So not to mention teams who also think like the Bengals and draft corners in the first round. So I just think that that's also part of all of this with Dre.
Yep. And the bottom line was they had two first-round corners who they wanted to get on the field and couldn't this year because of guys in front of them. And that tells you all you need to know about where they're at with that. So let's start going down the line to some of the other guys we've covered sort of. That's their clear big three. Rex Burkhead, and we talked a little bit about him as well. Boy, the fans love some Rex Burkhead.
He's scrappy.
He's a scrappy coach's fun son who's sneaky fast. He's the first guy in and the last guy out. He knows the playbook. I get it. Okay. And he played really well. You cannot argue with over the last six games, he averaged 4.5 yards a carry. You know, he had 426 total yards. I was running through. There was only five running backs that had as many attempts as he did as far as on the ground and through the air. That averaged 4.5 yards a carry and 8.6 a reception. And they're some of the best players, best running backs in the league. Ezekiel Elliott, good on the line. He was really good in that stint. Do you know that he can do that and stay healthy over the course of a full season? He definitely has very little tread on the tires.
Right.
This is a deep running back class coming out in the draft. So a lot of teams are going to be unwilling to pay for a running back, as most in the league are now.
Right.
You're not going to just, especially to a guy who's probably, you know, way off the radar for most teams. You could get him at a discount, or did he do enough that some team is going to feel like that they can swoop in and snag him, and the Bengals are not going to necessarily be willing to pay? I mean, they're paying Gio was what, 3.5? I don't remember what Gio's exact cap number is, but something like that. How much are you really willing to invest into running backs in the back half of their 20s? And granted, Rex is like he barely counts at that because he only has played like five games at running back. But it's still, when you can draft and reload that way, why pay? Paying running backs is something that I have a hard time with when the running back's best years are in the first 4 years and they're their cheapest years and you have a deep class coming. I just feel like that's something that you can find somebody as good, if not significantly better than Rex Burkhead, in a whole lot of places in this draft.
Yeah, I give him credit for seizing the opportunity. I mean, we've seen this, Paul. Not a lot of guys want an opportunity, but then they don't really do much with it, especially at running back, to be honest. We've seen it around the league. But yeah, I mean, Gio signed a 3-year, $15.5 million deal. Yes, he has a torn ACL. There was no other ligament meniscus issues. So you just sort of assume rehab will go the right way. And I think the team has to assume that as well. So he's under contract through 2019. You're right. His cap hit $3.7 million next year. But if you're talking about re-signing Rex Burkhead, that's multi-year deal. So Gio's number pops up up to about 4.2 and then 4.5 at the end of that deal. You're paying Jeremy Hill another $1 million, whatever it is, the final year of his rookie deal this coming season. You're right, Paul. I guess what are the comps out there? Danny Woodhead's similar type of guy, I guess, $2.5 million he's been making in San Diego. Ronnie Hillman, he's still finishing up a rookie deal, kind of like Burkhead. I don't know. I mean, he's going to make himself $1 to $2 million a year, maybe $2.5 million.
Which I think if that's where it ends up being, I think the Bengals will pay it. But if another team is offering it and he can get opportunity there, whereas if he comes back here and they're just like, yeah, you're in the mix, are they going to guarantee him a starting spot?
No.
Well, no, partially because they don't even – I mean, they're going to be drafting a guy. If they come out of this draft with 11 picks and don't draft a running back and one of the deepest ones, I will be standing on a table the same way I did when they didn't draft a wide receiver the previous two seasons.
Right. And I guess because free agency's first, Paul, we'll know that right away. I mean,
yeah.
we'll know Jeremy Hill's future and Rex Burkhead's future if this team not only pays him market value, but he agrees to come back. Because, look, everybody wants – hey, yes, everybody wants to get paid. But more – you know, honestly, people, Rex wants to play.
Yes.
And if it's kind of like Marvin Jones in that sense. The money might be exactly the same. The Bengals may say, you are worth 3 years, $6.5 million. But if – you know, I don't know. The Saints offer the same amount of money, but he's going to play 60% of the snaps. He's going there. So yes. It's just, but if he comes back, I think the very next question to ask is Jeremy Hill going to be on the team come camp? Or if he is, his role has to change at that point because you can't be paying Gio $3.7 million, then $4.2 million, $4.5 million, Rex $2.5 million.
I would be under the assumption that he would become a goal line back type guy if that happened and be fighting for a job again, you know, assuming if they brought back Cedric Pierman, right, as the fourth special teams ace type guy, and you have Jeremy Hill and a rookie in there, maybe Jeremy Hill is playing for his job at that point. I don't know. I don't know how, what that construction looks like. Are they going to say, okay, let Cedric Pierman walk if Rex Burkhead comes back because Rex is good on special teams? They value special teams a lot, and Cedric Pierman is going to be bargain basement. And for a guy who's a fourth running back and special teamer, I mean, that's he's going to fill that position as well as anybody. Jeremy Hill doesn't give you anything on special teams.
Right.
And right. If he's not your one of your starting two running backs, I don't really know what he is giving you outside of when not playing the Browns, 2 point whatever yards per carry.
Yeah, so I, you know.
It's a problem. It was a regression year for Jeremy. He was still very good around the goal line, but especially when you see Rex Burkhead come in the same role and have so much more success and be so much more efficient, it's really hard not to see that and it be abundantly clear that maybe it's time to move forward, whether that's with Rex or a rookie, I think is probably yet to be seen.
Yeah, and again, well, I mean, Rex, I think if they sign him and he stays, if they draft a running back, Paul, it'll be really late because you're not paying. I mean, you'd include Jeremy's salary for the year. You're not paying, you know, three running backs, all that money, I guess, to not play.
Jeremy isn't making that much money. Jeremy's on a rookie deal.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying in total value for the position.
Yeah.
While also drafting a guy, because that means Pierman's gone, because he can't carry five running backs. I mean, no. Maybe you can, yeah. But you can't. So it's just, I think Rex is gone. I think they'll try. This may speak more to Jeremy and how they view him. I guess it's pop. I mean, I don't know. This team doesn't just release guys. I could see them maybe giving him one more shot, saying, "All right, well, this dude's got to prove he can play anywhere in this league in 2018." So this is the last shot for him, and then you draft that guy, like you said, to be ready.
There's definitely some really interesting dominoes with whatever happens with Rex Burkhead. Right. I just really feel like, personally, he's going to see more opportunity elsewhere.
Right.
And run to that. Brandon LaFell, we have him up pretty high at 65%. He was only on a one-year deal. He had a cap number of 2.4. I mean, it's – He was not super expensive. I think he played well enough that maybe he'll get a raise or something like that. But he's not going to be a crazy number. He's you really love him as your number three, but he was solid as number two. I mean, he was really good down the stretch. He's 30, so you're a little leery. But if he's willing to kind of do the same thing he did, a 1 or 2 year deal, they loved what Brandon LaFell brought to a really young room. Or are they just, they saw enough of Core and Boyd and even Erickson, and then throw in a, maybe if they're going to draft somebody that they're really they feel like that's enough to go forward with. I don't know. I just think they really like what LaFell brought to the room.
Yeah, I think so too. He wants to be back. He spoke much like AJ McCarron spoke about the team in the past tense on his way out. Brandon LaFell spoke about it in the present and in the future. He wants to be back. I know that, and that does matter. You know, he came to Cincinnati for a reason, and that was so he could get single covered because AJ Green and Tyler Eifert are over there. I mean, he's not a dumb guy. You know, that's the other thing. I mean, he knows he will have great numbers and great success in Cincinnati based off that. You know, he didn't have any issues with the offense per se. You know, he thinks it'll only get better. He is one of the older guys on the free agent market. However, it's another sort of thin group. You know, Alshon Jeffrey is at the top of that. I really don't think Vincent Jackson's going to command the money or Pierre Garçon or DeSean Jackson, the money they had been making. You know, so maybe there'll be some competition. I think Brandon LaFell's going to go where he can get, you're right, Paul, that two-year deal. But, you know, he knows the business. It'll be interesting. Yeah, 2.5, he said he's probably going to have hand surgery. I don't really remember as many drops late in the year, and definitely not as many as a year ago, I don't think. So, yeah.
Would you be comfortable? I mean, would you be comfortable if your top receivers next year were Green, Boyd, Core, Erickson, maybe Wright or a rookie or somebody else? I mean, is that enough for you? I don't. Cody Core is nice. Okay, they look like they got a nice value in that round. I don't want him as my number two, and I don't want him on the field 75% of snaps like the third receiver is. Whether Boyd's your two playing the outside and then moving inside when they go to three wide, they're in three wide the majority of the time.
Right,
at least they were.
Right, you know, Paul.
It makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, Brandon LaFell's this is one of those interesting things where again the flip over the last few years of the free agency before the draft kind of plays into things, because I thought Tyler Boyd really improved in his route running throughout the year. You know, he seems suited for the slot in ways to get some mismatches in the seam. Do they really – is that his future? And you're right. Do they like him there? You mentioned the two receiver sets. And, of course, I think Brandon LaFell is enough of a team guy to understand, all right, well, Tyler Boyd's the guy that's got to be out there. You know, do you sign Brandon LaFell a two-year, $5 million deal, $6 million deal, and then all of a sudden Mike Williams is sitting for you at number nine?
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Well, I'd take that dude, and all of a sudden you got $5 million Brandon LaFell playing like 20% of the snaps.
That's why on BTS, Marvin Lewis was saying he just wishes the draft was before free agency. Right.
So, that's one of those really interesting things. And, yeah, there's injuries and whatever. But you're right, Paul. At number nine, that's a guy that's got to play. So,
and you're expecting receivers to take a pretty big jump between year one and year two. Yeah. And I don't know. It's a really interesting decision. I just think they like him. I think he brings you value. I think if you could get him at another one-year deal – you'd be really happy, but I don't know if he's going to tolerate that. And I think he could get 2 years somewhere, even being 30, just because of particularly the finish that he had to the season. He showed when you need to rely on him, he can make some plays for you.
Right. Yeah. No.
Great. I mean, he's not great. That's the other thing.
He's a guy.
He's a guy.
And I would say Tyler Boyd is, you know, he's that guy right now. Like Tyler Boyd, you put Tyler Boyd out there, I think he could catch 60 passes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess that's part of this. You know, then what do you do? You know, Kendall Wright will be a free agent. It seems like forever ago that dude caught 94 balls. He's only sort of regressed as Tennessee's offense has changed the last two, three years. You know, there's some other like LaFell type guys that will become available or be available. I mean, LaFell was released, so we're just looking at a free agent list. Who knows? Guys are going to be cap casualties over the winter. So, you know, but you're right. I put it at 65 because you're right, Paul. I do think there's a lot of mutual interest and satisfaction, to be honest. I mean, I think and then, hey, if he's got to sit because someone follows you at 9, I think the team would be okay with that.
Yeah, yeah. Another – so I'll tell you, last year there were more big names. This year there's more really interesting decisions.
Yes.
And decisions with dominoes where they're, it's not as big. I mean, you're not talking about these huge pieces that you've developed, but
right.
just different ones that have a whole lot of dominoes into how they're going to go forward. We've talked about some of these on the defensive line. I think we're in agreement that Domantas Peko is probably done here. I think they're ready to move on from him. He put in his time and has been unbelievable to the organization, and he's the nicest guy ever. But I think they've got a lot of youth there. They're ready to move on to Wallace Gilberry. I mean, they've already let him go once. I think they're ready to get to be younger on the defensive line. Marcus Hunt didn't work.
Right.
It never happened. He finally got some run. He played 30% of the snaps this year. And he didn't do anything. Hasn't had a sack in 2 years.
Right.
And you know, you add enough, that's enough snaps to know that it just isn't going to happen. And you go down that line. Brandon Thompson is not a free agent now.
No, right.
Okay. So originally it was thought that he was, but his contract actually was told, which means it repeats and rolls over to next year because he never came off of PUP. It's a really interesting thing. Sometimes when guys do come off of PUP, their contract can still get told. Sometimes when they don't, they become free agents. In this particular case, he never came off this year, so his one-year deal that he signed last year rolls over and repeats, so he's on a one-year contract for 2017, so he's not a free agent. He'll be back in the mix in the back end of that room fighting for a spot. So, you know, I just think they're just really ready to get younger there. Billings, Hardison. Right. Obviously, they still have Geno. Pat Sims is under contract. I mean, I just named 4 defensive tackles. That's how many you would have active on a game day anyway. Right. You know, and you get to the edge, Michael Johnson, Carlos Dunlap, Will Clark under contract. A edge rusher is coming early in this draft, period. First round or second round. I would be shocked. You have to pick me up off the floor on Saturday if round 4 comes and they haven't found an edge rusher in this draft. I think it's priority number 1 at number 9.
Corner and tackle, Paul. What are you, come on.
Enough with the corners and the tackles.
Best available. Generational.
Yeah, I mean, May Munoz.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, my goodness. They need an edge rusher that can play alongside Michael Johnson so badly, and there's only so many times you can get – there's just not a lot of those guys. They're elite guys, and picking in the top 10, you can find some depending on who is there, and we'll have plenty of time to go into those guys. A couple of them I think you saw playing in the national championship maybe. So, you know, it's just – I just think there's going to be a whole movement on that line to get younger, and I think it's necessary.
Yeah, I agree, Paul. Hardison actually looked better in camp than Deshaun Williams did before he got hurt yet again. You know, and maybe Brandon Thompson fits in that same category of like a guy who just – well, Thompson didn't really play, and now he's been hurt. But Hardison's interesting. Deshaun Williams is interesting. I mean, he was around, I guess. That when he finally became active and was part of that rotation, you saw his number in the backfield. So I think he's earned another long look, I guess.
Hardison's had 2 good preseasons.
Right. And I
he's made the impression both years And it, you know, you hope that he doesn't turn into the next Sean Porter.
Right, right.
He cannot get healthy. But I'm telling you, I think he has breakout potential written all over him. It would make 100% sense if he was a starter or playing in that Gilberry role next year, as long as he was healthy and he does what he has done in the last two preseasons.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it's time. It's just time. You're right. Billings will be interesting. Know nothing about him. He was injured so early. It's impossible to say what he is or what he could be, other than we know the Bengals had a very high draft grade. They kind of like the Josh Shaw situation. They feel they got a guy in a round that should have went two rounds earlier. So yeah. How that actually translates, we don't know. But you're right. I think it's time for some new blood in that interior and on the edge if that guy's available at number nine.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right there. Going down the line, Carlos Dansby.
Yeah.
Speaking of its time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah, he looked like a guy who's 35. And just he's played a lot of snaps and
yeah.
Had an incredible career. He'll tell you how great it is.
Yes.
I mean, you know, he had a great career. But I think it's over for him. Randy Bullock, I don't think he's going to be in the mix at kicker. I would assume that they're going to go into free agency and find a guy, a decent kicker. Greg Zuerlein has to be the top, near the top of the list that you're willing to pay for. Who's good? He's got a big leg, been around, made a lot of kicks, hit to the high percentage. Then you can maybe even throw somebody in there as an undrafted kicker coming out or something like that. Maybe even bring in Hawker, somebody as a third guy in camp and have a competition, so to speak. But Randy Bullock, despite the fact he only missed one kick, missed the biggest one. And I think that would be much that for him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, Paul. You asked Marvin Lewis this question about the value of kickers, and Marvin's like, I've always valued kickers. Right now, there's eight guys available on the unrestricted market, not including Mike Nugent. And, you know, Greg Zuerlein is the youngest. Actually, Randy Bullock's the youngest that has much experience. So there, you might have a competition, if you will, for some of these guys in, career field goal percentage, or at least in-season field goal percentages of around 86 to 89%. Not really that great.
Better than Nuge.
You know?
Coming into the year even. I mean,
right.
He was a guy with a career 82%.
Yeah, it is better. You're right. Robbie Gould will be the interesting one. You know, the Bears cut him, and he kind of didn't really do a whole lot of anything until he went perfect for the at least perfect on field goals. He did miss, some extra points for the Giants down the stretch. He's 35. I guess I could see Bullock coming back not to be the kicker, but to be a kicker in camp. What I mean? Like, oh, we liked him. We're going to try to sign him before Pittsburgh did, but we didn't. So then we got him.
You cannot trot the guy out that missed the one big kick he had. You can't just bring that guy back. You talk about waving the white flag.
They did it with Nuge. I could see him being like there.
They had an investment, and there is a thing with Nuge. This is just a guy. Randy Bullock was a guy off the street.
Well, why did Carlos Dansby play over Nick Vigil all the time? They had no loyalty to that. I just think this team operates in such a weird way. I'm not saying he'll be the guy in 2017. I could just see him being a guy.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know.
You're a guy.
I might be able to make a 19-yarder, maybe.
or you'd whiff like those people that come out between the quarters and like just joink one off to the left that just rolls through the end zone. All right. I think we went through pretty much. I think we got just about everybody in there. So that's where we're at. Did you have anything that was making you mad?
Man, it's kind of standard, but it had been a while since people not understanding what the yield sign means. Like, yield means you don't get to go in front of me. And, you know, look, I get it. My one hubcap Yaris is not really that intimidating. But I have been driving around in our other car, which is a little bit bigger. It's a Chevy SUV. And you know what? I've made my presence known. Yield. I want to swear because that's what I say in the car. You know, it's almost like MF and Jerry Porter. It's like MF and yield, MF and. And I use the horn. Oh, I'm a liberal horn user.
You are a liberal
horn. I am. And it's unbelievable. I'm getting mad thinking about it right now. I can visualize this dude this morning, Paul. Oh,
just man, you know what? Like, we do a lot of these ride along type videos. You see, like, the comedians in cars getting coffee and stuff. I just want to see what it's like to do, like, riding with Jim and, like, an unsuspecting, really calm person, like a nun, has to roll with you around for a little bit, maybe, you know, something like that. We get somebody with a really calm personality, just has to sit passenger seat while you roll around in your Yaris and get mad about yield signs and lane change and these types of things. This is what I think that we need. I think this is our real entertainment value this offseason.
You know, I would be up for it, although I think I would venture into the if people watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia last season when Dennis and Mac moved to the suburbs and Dennis commutes in to the bar for work, and you see the road, the kind of crazy road rage. It might be funny initially, but I know it can be kind of, might be a little scary. Because I get mad. I'm serious. I get mad even thinking about it.
We'll put on HBO, but where it's the internet, like, you can do and say whatever you want. I'm just saying. I just feel like there's a lot of entertainment value there. I keep visioning, like, you know, a nun holding her rosary and praying while you just scream at somebody at a yield sign.
Yeah. I think you should, if you can't follow the street sign, I should be able to run you off the road.
So, you're not the one that violated the rules.
Exactly. You have to yield. So if I pushed you in all those orange cones, that's not my fault. Because you know.
Yes.
That's just that's how I see it.
On that note, I think I should get out of here. All right. So we need a song to take us out. So we're heading into the off season here a little bit. We talked a little bit about free agents and money, and I don't know.
I kind of wanted to go newer and get some fresher music in here, but I think on the idea of it's the off season. And I know we're going to be hitting people with the BBP on a more regular basis this year. But considering it's free agency, considering I got Senior Bowl coming up in a couple weeks, you got the Super Bowl, we got the Combine, I think we should start with, wherever I may roam. Maybe I go with a classic.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. Because we really don't know. You really don't know where we're going to be. We're going to be all over the place.
Right.
We're unpredictable. I liked it. That's a good classy choice. I give you some credit. Yeah. It's been a while since you made a good choice. So credit to you on that one. All right. Remember, keep checking out the BBP. We're here every week throughout the entire off season. You can always count on us coming your way on Tuesdays. So keep checking in every week. We'll keep updating you on everything that's going on. Make sure you have your Bengals app, as you know, you need that. Because we'll be buzzing you in your pocket anytime there's any Bengals news, we will tell you about it. So anyway, we'll talk to you later. Thanks everybody for listening to the BBP, and have a good one.